If you're enjoying this independent podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a few moments to do a review, like, share and subscribe. And if you'd like to see extra content and show your support, head to the Patreon. The link is in the show notes. It's early 2023 and the floodgates had opened. The victims had found an ally in Richard Grannan. He himself was still getting his head around Sam's deception with him and an ongoing ferocious smear campaign. Sam had given Richard's personal details to his flying monkeys, leading to abusive calls and texts. He was also dealing with his own shame of crossing the line with Jane. To be clear, Jane and he have no ill feeling toward each other. They were both pawns in Sam's game, moving at his will, and then being punished for it. I haven't played you the audio of Richard's long account of his encounter with Jane to protect her identity. As a woman, I've heard men from my own life try and explain themselves out of indiscretions. Richard was candid, took responsibility for his part, and laid bare something that he could be criticised for, which of course was the whole goal for Sam. Richard had refused women being pushed on him by Sam many, many times over the years. But he got Richard at a weak moment. The timing was perfect. We'll return to my discussion with Richard, where he begins by telling me how it felt receiving more and more information from the multiple victims about the abuse they suffered and wanting him to put it right.
Very hard. Very, very hard. All of these women were very emotionally dysregulated. They're heavily traumatized. They're obviously they're oversharing because they'd sort of gone into this mindset of, here's Richard. He's a man. He has all the power in this situation. He can click his fingers and take Sam Vaknin down. And I was being hit with literally hundreds of texts a day. And they were pleas. They were demands at times that I do something about this. And I was saying to them, look, you've got to be realistic when it comes to the law. Unless you come forward and offer some sort of witness testimony, there's nothing anybody can do. And they said, well, you can tell the police what we've told you. And I said, I assure you, the police and any court is then going to say to me, where are the women? It just doesn't work like that. You need evidence. You're innocent until proven otherwise. So it was hard. It was very, very hard. And I understood where they were coming from, and I did feel sympathy for them, but overall it was a tough experience.
Explain to me what it felt like realizing the true horror of this man that you had believed to be kind of with harmless bravado, knowing what he'd actually done.
They say there's stages to grieving, don't they? So it wasn't a sudden realization. I remember saying to Mark at one point, every week that goes by, I'm being told some new thing that adds another level of nauseating horror to this story, just when I think I've got my head around it and I can process it. And that went on for a long time. That went on throughout the entirety of 2023. Not the entirety, by month 9, so it began in January, and by September, October, it cooled off. But there was just more and more, and adoption papers, the deliberate transmission of HPV, and of course it logically made sense to always be cynical at first and say, okay, are you sure? Because they had accused him of things that didn't, you know, they accused him of being the kingpin of a human trafficking ring. And I said, I don't think we should lead with that because there's not much evidence for it. The deliberate HPV thing, I was like, okay, let me think like how a police, an inspector, somebody investigating this, I'll be like, how can you prove that he knew that he had this cancer-causing strain of HPV? So I didn't just accept everything. I questioned everything and I kept questioning. And that, of course, frustrated them, and they felt like they weren't being listened to and they weren't being believed. But I kept reassuring them, like, this is what will need to be answered. What do you want me to do? You obviously want me to do something. What do you want me to do unless you come forward and go to the police and are prepared to make witness testimonies?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I have to approach my job, because I've sat through so many court cases where things are far more simplistic of man rapes woman, and even those ones that you think are straightforward, they're not. And even though there's physical evidence taken immediately after, the man can just say, oh well, it was rough sex or whatever, and they've never met before, all those things. So even cases that feel so cut and dry of a very clear victim, a very clear predator, it is very hard to get it over the line in court. I experienced that myself, and I think that with this case, what is so difficult, it's not in one location. He commits the, if we're going to look for the physical crimes where he is physically sexually coercing them or sexually assaulting them or raping them, that usually occurs in a country that he is definitely not from. It does not happen in Israel. And I'm not sure if I know of an example where one of the victims is from that location as well. Now, let's add on the shame, the blame, the self-disgust and all that for the women who have, you know, had sex not with a knife to their throat, but a knife to their psyche, though, because of the brainwashing. Consent, I just do not believe this is there is no consent here. This is not a consensual situation between two adults. It's just not the case at all. A woman going to report that to the police in their home country, their hometown, would take time. Not many would do it immediately, because they fear that if they walk into a cop shop full of guys and sit down and try and explain the complexity of that, there's no way. And for them to do it in a country that they don't live in, that they've already got their plane or train ticket booked to exit because they were just attending whatever it was, a seminar or for intense therapy, you know, he knows all this. He knows that it would be incredibly hard. In fact, I think even he boasts in about it that no one would believe them. But he does also interject and say, well, it's all lies anyway, but even if you did. Interestingly, though, in the confrontation part of my interview with him, when I bring up the coercive sex, the knowingly infecting them with HPV, he actually says, I don't know anything about this, or no one has brought this up with me. We know that's not true. I've got it in writing that he's aware of the accusations, or he's aware he could be accused of that. No one would believe them in a court, etc. So he is caught out lying multiple times.
Interrupting for a moment, more than one victim did go to the police. One in Poland was horrified by the response.
You might remember me mentioning earlier in the series that there are some people who did try and go and get help. Now, there's a communication between one of the victims and Anne, because Anne was offering to go to the police as well. But Anne is from Russia, which has its own complications. So this victim says to Anne, there's no way for you to talk to the Polish police. They don't believe me. She says, at the end, the woman who was interrogating me told me I should seek help from a psychologist myself, and that I may be accused of a crime myself because I was blackmailing Vakhnin, and that is why he closed the seminar. I was threatening him. This is not true, by the way. I was being treated as a naive child who is too emotionally involved in the case. The interrogator told me that I shouldn't believe women who may be vindictive towards Vakhnin, and that the police have thousands of such accusations towards famous public people because someone wants to destroy their image. A vicious ex-wife, for example. She says, emotionally, I was a mess at the end, and she told me that she doesn't understand why I'm crying. She said, I may be accused of a crime by Vaknin himself in the future. The police told me that there is no way for you to talk to the Polish police because this is illegal, and that the country in which the crime was conducted should be involved, not Poland. That's because Anne did not have any interactions with him in Poland, so I do understand that. I think her offer is more to corroborate that this man is acting in this way in different countries. She told me it is narcissistic to think that Polish police are better than other countries and should be involved, and that you and other women may be too sensitive or autistic. They didn't believe me. When I was trying to involve you in this, she was mad at me that I didn't understand the law forbids such practices. She told me also that Vaknin may well accuse us of destroying his public image because of the documentary. I was not being taken seriously. So these women are actually telling the police, look, we're actually involved in a documentary, we're speaking to someone. I think that gave them the confidence at the time. She continues, the worst part was when she told me to seek psychological help and that you should too. So can you imagine this? You finally get the bravery to go to the police. They don't believe you. They accuse you of having a psychological disorder. Say that if you continue with your accusations, you're likely to be charged with a crime. And that you're not allowed to involve any of the other victims, the other witnesses, the people who could corroborate your story. It's no surprise that so many victims don't come forward.
Among the masses of digital evidence, there's a lot of communication between Sam and his victims, which prove that he knew he was infecting them with HPV. He describes himself as being the cleanest man you could have sex with because he tests himself every 3 months. This is bizarre because he tells some of the women that he's abstained from sex for years and is in a sexless marriage. So why would he be getting tested if he's not having sex? He lists the tests they must have and promises to undergo testing too. One of the women specifically requests HPV is tested for, and he later confirms he was given a clean bill of health. Fast forward, the victim, who hadn't had sex with anyone else apart from Sam, confronts him when she discovers she has HPV. She's also discovered he's been with lots of other women who are accusing him of the crimes. He says the accusations of rape, sexual assault and sexual coercion are lies. And Richard has been coaching the women to say this. Like his argument with Richard, he goes round and round claiming he was clean, saying there's no test for HPV, then saying he had no idea he had it. He contradicts himself. It's exhausting, which is precisely his goal. Confusion, repetition, chaos. Both the filmmakers and Richard were faced with this mountain of evidence, and they had to wade through it too, to try and make sense of it before deciding how to proceed.
I reached out to Mark and said, look, my intention was just to be taken out of the documentary. I just said, you're going to have to pull me out of this, because I didn't know where Mark would fall on it, because I didn't know Mark as well. Back then, it's a couple of years ago. And I was like, I am in a documentary praising and essentially recommending a guy who I now know to be a sex predator. You got to pull all that out. And I think you should just drop me from the documentary. And Mark said, no, we're one step ahead of you. We've already been contacted. We were going to contact you anyway. And we need to talk, basically. And he wanted to know what had really been going on and what had really happened. I told him. I think I went and met him in Portugal. I met him in Lisbon, and I just told him everything that I knew, everything that I had.
Did you feel at that point that there might be some hope in exposing him rather than just him being taken out and deleted, which I think a lot of filmmakers would have done, is let's step away from this mess. No one will ever see these interviews.
Well, there was, yeah, because there was multiple strategies. I mean, I was talking to the victims and I was saying, you know, if you won't go to court, the only thing we can do is try and put money together. I'll get myself taken out of the documentary and then I'll put money together and I can take your testimony anonymously and I'll make my own documentary and release it and it will just be anonymous. I said, it's not the strongest move that we can make, but I don't really see another way to get your stories out and to get the word out and to warn other potential victims in the future, because we can't change the past, but we could stop him from doing it again. But yeah, Mark and Scott were already well ahead of that, and they said no, this is something that we actually are going to expose and we're going to put it into the documentary. And I was delighted. I was like, okay, that's good. That means more people will know, and then he will have no chance of ever doing this ever again. I would love for him to go to prison for what he's done, but I know how long a road that could be to actually happen. But if it means that he's just never able to do this again, and that people know who he really is, then I would take that as a second.
What's interesting is that these women, I mean, one of his techniques to try and silence them was to boast about the fact that he was going to be in this big documentary. He has been interviewed by many people, and there's a broadcaster in the UK, a very well respected one, who's had him on her show 15 times, including I think a week before or 2 weeks before I met him. And one of the first things I did was contact someone I know that could get a message to her to say, do not interview him again. But there's many other people with, you know, their own audience on YouTube who work in the psychology field who have done what you did, which was, you know, he pre-warns, oh, I've got these crazy fans, or I've got this former patient who's mentally unstable, which isn't out of the realms of possibility. And it's women, though. It's women that not only have they not believed the women coming to them saying, stop platforming him, he's dangerous. Not only do they not believe these women, that there's one of them that actually reported one of these women to the police as though she's the bad person. So, you know, it takes so much, not just for the woman to realise what she's gone through, to realise she's a victim. I use this phrase a lot. The worst kind of prisoner is the one that doesn't realise they're in a jail. I think Jane is an example of that. I think she's starting to see the light, but without proper therapy, and I mean serious therapy, she's not going to be able to, you know, resolve what she's gone through. I think any form of abuse of this nature, be it in a relationship or, you know, whatever the setup is, the scenario, when someone is psychologically tortured, attacked, brainwashed, it is extremely complicated, and you really need specialist law enforcement officers who understand, because they just don't get it. That is why the storytelling, why, you know, doing this interview with you is so key for people to understand. Because there is a clear bad guy in the story. But what reduces, diminishes his evil is when he starts scattering in, oh, but they consented, but look at this, or you. The reason, Richard, I believe that he needed you to do something that could be frowned upon in whatever way, he needed collateral against you. He was planning it. He already knew that, you know, you were hanging on by a thread and you were going to go. So he needed to do something, that he had one thing to discredit you on. I haven't really got a question. I've just said a lot of things, but
What you said was true. What you said, I think is right. It's, but that's like back to the beginning. I said, like, if you can keep people destabilized, if you can keep muddying the water, it makes moral discernment very, very difficult. And that's what they bank on. Because if moral discernment is easy, you can say, okay, what you've done is evil, and you're an evildoer, and I rebuke you, I reject you. Then they lose their power. They need to soften everybody's moral boundaries and try and draw, as you've just said, an equivalence between pretending to be a therapist and then coercing a young woman into sex and then deliberately brainwashing her with the intention of abandoning her and causing her suicide. He's trying to draw an equivalence to that, to what I eventually consented to. He's like, it's the same. And hopefully people can use their brains and go, no, it's not the same. That's not the same. People might not like it. They might be like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. And they're probably right. You know, where was the first mistake? The first mistake was agreeing to meet her at all. But I don't want them to get confused and think there's an equivalence between the two things, because there isn't. And that's what he will be claiming, because he's ridiculous. As he tried it with you, he said that you're being immoral, you're being unprofessional by asking me factual questions about my professional life. That's not an equivalence. That doesn't mean, first of all, it's not true. It's literally your job. But he's trying to put the ball back in your court and say, what about you?
I want to thank you for being so candid, though, and honest about, because, you know, you and I, off camera, off mic, had a discussion without me knowing the full story. But I think it's really important to, you know, to be honest about that. And
I just feel like the truth is the best defense. Like, he's going to try and convince the people he's involved with that their wrongdoing is greater than his. And he knows perfectly well that that's not true. If you have codependency issues, if you have people pleaser symptoms, you can be tricked into being guilted. So what his goal is to make you feel like you've done some terrible thing. That all narcissists do that. All narcissistic psychopaths behave in that way. It's just a strategy. So my thing is, I know that I'm not of evil intent. I know I'm not out there trying to hurt people. So being candid, telling the truth and just going, well, this is what happened. It's not a great story. Not my finest hour, but that it is what it is. I'm human.
Not to, well, I'm about to generalize. There's a lot of men that would have caved very early with a very attractive young woman.
Well, they would have pursued her. But I was just thinking, big picture, like this is just not smart. I knew it wasn't smart. I didn't just do it to step on a landmine with Sam. I did it to step on a landmine with my ex. I was like, I'm not strong enough to say no. But if I destroy the trust in the relationship, it will resolve itself. And my ex texted me at 4 o'clock in the morning and said, where are you? I've been calling you for hours. And I said to her, I'm in a hotel room with another girl. And she was devastated. And it was a terminus point in the relationship. And so was it self-destructive, masochistic? I don't know. You know, there are easier ways of getting things done, which is why I say to people, just go to therapy. Just go to therapy. Yes, you will cry. Yes, you'll experience negative emotion, but you'll be in less trouble in your normal daily dealings if you just go to therapy and just, what is the expression? Grasp the rose by the thorns or whatever, or grab the bull by the horns. Just get it over with. Just say to somebody, I don't want to work with you anymore, or I don't want to date you anymore. I'm scared of being alone. I feel guilty. I feel this. I feel no. This is the way it needs to be. I'll deal with it. Don't do what I did.
I tell everyone that, again, this is what's so cruel about this whole story. I tell everyone to go to therapy. Whether as soon as you think you're okay, it's probably when you need to go. This is what's messed up. Go and have therapy. But watch out in case your therapist is an evil sex predator who's a nut. You know. This is the thing. And what I say to people is, with regards to Sam, this is a published author all over the internet, been interviewed multiple times. I mean, if you went and found iPsych, you need to kind of know about iPsychopath to go and find it. If you Google him, it's buried because there's so many other videos of him. When someone has a forward-facing platform like that, you think, well, they have to be decent because it would be public knowledge if they were a bad person.
And that's my culpability in this. You know, I'm very, very sorry that I elevated him in status in any way. I'm very, very sorry. And if anybody got involved with him and was hurt by him because I elevated his status, I unreservedly apologize. Like, I'm very sorry.
It's not your fault. I think every it's not.
It's a little bit.
But
it's a little bit.
There's nothing in you consciously that elevated a person. You didn't have the information.
It's like the stuff that happened in my childhood home was in me and then got out through the internet. And then it started to come out and multiply out in the world and in the chaos in the world. It's such a mess because it's all my unresolved stuff that caused me to want to elevate him. It's not my fault that he does what he does, but had I been a little bit more healed, I wouldn't have done that. I would have just gone, there's a weird guy. Oh, well, fuck him. I moved on, which is what I should have done.
I hope our discussion has demonstrated why Richard was fooled by him too. Society tends to believe men more than women, and his experiences and knowing Sam give strength to the victims. And if you are in any doubt about Sam's intentions towards Richard, this is what he wrote to one of his victims. My videos are aimed to trigger Richard. It will take months. I'm pushing him to disintegrate via paranoia. There is nothing good about me. That there is no redeeming feature is my grandiosity. I'm evil and insane. Think Hannibal Lecter. I have no idea how Grannan manages to sleep at all. I would be out of my mind with fear had I been him. Maybe he is suicidal. Slow process, but guaranteed outcomes, as you will see. Richard does not fear Sam. It is Sam who should now fear Richard. In the next episode of The Narcissist Playbook, Fake Professor, doubt that Sam even has a degree in psychology.
He does not have the credentials he's claiming he has, which, as far as I'm aware, is fraudulent.
Sam condemns frauds, all the while being one.
It should be outlawed, I'm not kidding. It should be criminalized, absolutely. You want to call yourself a narcissism expert, you need to pass an exam.
And a bombshell interview from 20 years ago reveals the truth.
The PhD was acquired in a diploma mill. Diploma mill in the United States means a place where you buy your degrees. So it's a diploma mill, I'm not a real PhD.
The Storyteller Narcissist Playbook is written, produced and edited by me, Isla Traquair, and is the fourth in the Storyteller series. You can see videos, evidence, analysis and more on my Patreon. The link is in the show notes, and is a great way for you to show your support for this independent production. Another way to show your support for free is to like, review, share and subscribe. A few clicks makes a huge difference and lets people find this important story. If you've been affected by narcissistic abuse, there are links for support in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening.